This is Mornings with Kale in Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
Well, as the oil and gas wars continue, not only across the state, but indeed from the federal level, courtesy of Executive Order Appaloosa, among those executive orders by President Joe Biden, including a moratorium on new oil and gas leases on federal land, and of course, basically shutting down work on the Keystone XL pipeline. Senator Michael Bennet, oddly quiet when it comes to these developments, although he is among four Senate Democrats who have flipped on the Keystone XL pipeline. Governor Jared Polis, for his part, saying that, well, he believes that these executive orders are appropriately aggressive. Talk about biting the hand that feeds you. Joined this morning by Will Allison. Will, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Gil. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Will, by the way, is a spokesman for Energy in Depth, an education and public outreach campaign sponsored by the Independent Petroleum Association of America. Okay, so what is your take on all of this?
Well, Gail, there's several issues that I think that we're going to face because of this moratorium, and especially if it becomes permanent. The first one, I think, obviously, is the potential job losses. In Weld County, where you are, there's about 4 million barrels of oil and 19 million cubic feet of natural gas that were produced on federal land there in 2019. That's a lot of jobs producing that energy, which generated $25 million in federal tax revenue. And then on the other side of Colorado, where most of the federal land is, the production on federal land in Colorado is, in Garfield County, and that's where a lot of natural gas is produced. And that's where State Senator Bob Rankin, who's quoted in a local news story that said, "I believe the gas industry in western Colorado may just collapse. There are small companies. Many of them will just cease to go bankrupt. They'll go out of business." So I think that quote is pretty definitive. And it's not just the workers who work for the oil and gas company, but it's also the hotels, the restaurants, the hardware stores, the coffee shops. All of these things, you know, form a big economic ecosystem that's going to have a big economic impact for a lot of working class and blue collar folks in Colorado and across the American West.
What's the time frame? I mean, what is the anticipated time frame that we are looking at here? Because some say sooner than later, others say, no, the impact might be further on down the proverbial pipeline.
That's a good question. I think it really depends on where you are. For example, there's already stories in New Mexico, which produces the most oil and gas on federal lands. Already, they're moving drilling rigs from New Mexico to Texas because Texas is mostly private land. So if you're an oil and gas worker in New Mexico, I think the impact is happening right now. Or maybe in other places, it may be a little bit more down the line. But, you know, if the moratorium becomes, you know, right now it's more of a temporary thing. If it does become permanent in the near future, I think those impacts could be coming very quickly. And, you know, and it's not just the moratorium. You know, the Keystone XL pipeline, that's not federal lands. It's not a federal lands issue. But, you know, for those workers, they were out of a job overnight. So, you know, the fact that this cap could happen very quickly in a lot of places is very real.
Yeah, with a stroke of a pen, it's absolutely terrifying and heartbreaking. I heard from a couple of acquaintances that I have in the oil and gas industry. They were impacted by this, and they're absolutely heartbroken. And then you've got the Biden administration saying, oh, no, don't worry about it, oil and gas workers. You who are making a ton of money, as they should be, working in the oil patch, who are able to put their kids through school and put food on the table. Oh, don't worry about it, because what we'll do is we'll retrain you and you can have a lovely career making solar panels. Of course, conveniently leaving out of the equation that a lot of those solar-related jobs, once the infrastructure is in place, those jobs will disappear.
Sure. And it's not like training for a job in the solar industry happens overnight. You know, for a lot of folks, the oil and gas industry is a very specific thing, and you can't just do a one-day seminar and all of a sudden understand how to install a solar panel or a wind turbine. So for those who are facing the threat of a job loss overnight or very soon, you know, that gap between the oil industry and whatever the next job may be is a lot longer than the threat of a job loss. And during the campaign, you know, candidate Biden made a big deal or talked a lot about a just transition of ensuring that you know, workers don't get left behind. And even on his website, he said, we're not going to leave any workers or communities behind as part of my energy plan. And unfortunately, I think that's already happening. It's happening in the Keystone XL pipeline. Looks like it's happening down in New Mexico. So unfortunately, those pledges of supporting workers is not coming true under these new federal policies.
Yeah, nothing says unity, right, Will? Like destroying high-paying oil and gas jobs. It's just a head-scratcher to me. And then when you look at the Keystone XL pipeline, and I'm sorry, I can't remember off the top of my head the stats, and maybe you have access to them, but okay, a lot of this is being done in the name of protecting our environment. Will you tell me, which is safer? Transporting oil on rail or in tanker trucks across the country or through a pipeline?
Absolutely a pipeline. You know, nothing is perfect, but we've seen in the past that there are plenty of dangers with rail transportation, for sure. And it's not just transportation within the United States. Part of the federal land is going to be banning production in the Gulf of Mexico. And there was an Obama-era report that said that production there is very clean because companies are required to capture every single molecule of oil and gas there. And that if you ban production there, the United States would then have to import oil from other countries. And that requires emissions for the ships to come to the United States. So it would actually do the opposite effect of what the Biden administration is hoping, is it would drive up emissions. Because we're not necessarily lowering oil and gas production, we're just reshuffling it. We're just creating jobs in another country, driving up emissions to bring the oil over here. So there's actually a lot of environmental backlash that is going to have the opposite effect of intended. And New Mexico and Wyoming have both said that this ban on federal lands is going to have environmental effects because it's just going to reduce their flexibility and ability to manage operations and perform reclamation projects and ensure oil and gas gets moved to market. So unfortunately, a policy that was sold as something to fight climate change could actually have the opposite effect.
A cautionary tale. Be careful mm-hmm. what you wish for. 815 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310KFKA.com, Northern Colorado's Voice. Will Allison is a spokesman for Energy in Depth, an education and public outreach campaign sponsored by the Independent Petroleum Association of America. Hey, but wait, it gets worse. Let's talk a little bit about the, I believe it's the Interior Secretary pick under the Biden administration?
Yes, that's going to be New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Haaland, who's been nominated to be the Interior Secretary, and that's the department that oversees the Bureau of Land Management, which oversees federal leasing. And in the past, she has been very opposed to oil and natural gas production on federal lands, despite the fact that in New Mexico, it supplies it seems nearly $1 billion every couple years in revenue to her state. So it's really is kind of biting the hand that feeds you. She's going to have a confirmation hearing at the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee next week, mm-hmm. where she will take questions from senators before they vote on her to confirm her as the nominee. And Colorado's own Senator John Hickenlooper is going to sit on that committee. He sent out a statement earlier this week saying that he had spoken with Congresswoman Haaland, but did not mention oil and gas production on federal lands. He didn't mention that issue. So it'll be interesting to see if he asks her about that issue during the confirmation hearing. Because at the same time, Senator Hickenlooper and Senator Michael Bennett, the other senator from Colorado, have said that they want the BLM headquarters relocation to Grand Junction to move ahead. So they support bringing BLM out to Colorado. But in their statement, they did not mention the big role that BLM plays in federal oil and gas leasing on federal land. So there's a bit of a cognitive dissonance here where that they support the BLM move to Colorado, but then they haven't made any comments on whether they support or oppose Biden's policy on banning production on federal land. So maybe we could get more information on from that during Congresswoman Haaland's confirmation hearing.
Which will probably be a rubber-stamped hearing, right?
Possibly so. We'll have to see. There's been several Republicans who have expressed concern with her viewpoints, and several Democrats, too. So Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia, he comes from a very heavy energy-producing state, obviously, and he's expressed concern with the Biden administration's policies and Congresswoman Howland's nomination. So it's not just a Republican issue. There's been bipartisan opposition to these policies lately.
Yeah, like you said, biting the hand that feeds you. Will Allison, spokesman for Energy in Depth, again, an education public outreach campaign sponsored by the Independent Petroleum Association of America. Where can we find out more about Energy in Depth? And I just wonder, do we have any cards to play?
Yes, you can go to energyindepth.org. Like you said, Gail, it's a project of the Independent Petroleum Association of America. And right now, our website is filled with all sorts of information on federal lands and the revenue that generates, the jobs that it supports, the environmental benefits of American-made oil and natural gas. So, yeah, I think that if people want to learn more, they could definitely go there, find out there, and talk to friends and family members about this issue.
Will Allison, thanks again for your time, and let's continue the conversation because I'm sure there's going to be plenty to talk about in the not-too-distant future.
Will do, Gail. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. 819 now, 1310 KFKA.
Hear Mornings with Gail, weekdays 6 to 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA. Prep Soups is back. Now you can watch and listen. Go to 1310kfka.com for details. Preps Radio is on. Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
Now, Governor Jared Polis delivering his third State of the State. And, let's just say he covered a lot of ground. But let's just see if you agree with his assessment of the State of the State. 838 now, 1310 KFKA, 1310KFKA.com. Northern Colorado's Voice, Mornings with Gail from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. Working from a rather in-depth and lengthy piece that I pulled out of Colorado Politics by Pat Poblete and Marianne Goodland, talking about the fact that, you had Governor Jared Polis delivering his third State of the State address to a chamber of masked lawmakers and guests separated by plexiglass, calling on the General Assembly, and see if these words send a shiver down your spine as they do mine. Governor Jared Polis calling on the General Assembly to seize the, quote, once-in-a-generation opportunity to not just build back stronger, not just build back stronger than where we were before the pandemic, but fundamentally reimagine Colorado's future. Why do those words seem to resonate and not in particularly pleasant fashion? Oh, wait, I remember why. It was before Barack Obama was elected. Do you remember the day before the election? He said, we're on the cusp of fundamentally changing America. Now you've got Governor Jared Polis wanting to fundamentally reimagine Colorado's future, and I'm sorry, based on the actions that we have seen coming out of the state legislature and the words coming out of Governor Jared Polis's mouth when it comes to his endorsement of what President Biden has done with those executive orders relative to oil and gas, remember, saying, I find those to be appropriately aggressive. Is he actually going to try to reimagine Colorado's future without a robust oil and gas industry? Just asking the question. because it seems as though the indications are that that is the way in which he plans to proceed. 970-353-1310. Drop me a text on our 1310 KFKA text line. By the way, if you have been part of our texting cohort for quite some time, nothing has changed. Everything remains the same. You can just fire up the blaster and text away to your heart's content. But if you are going to join our 1310 KFKA texting family, we've got a brand new number for you. And all you have to do the first time you use that number is text KFKA to 970-478-1301. And after that initial text, well, you too can text away to your heart's content. But reimagining, he wants to fundamentally reimagine Colorado's future. No more Band-Aids over gaping wounds, he said. I'd like for him to define those gaping wounds, wouldn't you? We in this chamber have the power to make bold transformational change. Is bold transformational change even needed? And will it only be to the detriment of so many hardworking Coloradoans? That's my question. Bold transformational change that ensures our state, he said yesterday during his third State of the State, to ensure our state lives up to its highest potential. We can and will seize this opportunity. Now, in a pretty wide-ranging 40-minute speech, Polis praised a host of lawmakers from, well, okay, a little bit of partisanship, a little bit of bipartisanship here, from both sides of the aisle, for their work to empower women in the workplace, overhaul school funding, stop the school-to-prison pipeline, and address health care costs. Efforts, he said, would move the state to, quote, a place that is stronger and a more inclusive. Day was not without the governor's salute to Coloradoans, whose attendance highlighted his policy points. Four frontline healthcare workers from Weld and Larimer County sat along the sides of the House chamber and received, as they certainly should, accolades from the governor, Dr. Greg Golden of Greeley. Congratulations, Dr. Golden. A pulmonologist who traveled to Phoenix and Wyoming to assist with ICU care of COVID-19 patients, Dr. John Cowden, also a pulmonologist in Greeley, congratulations to you, sir, as well, who, along with Golden, created an innovative process to care for COVID-19 patients. Polis also saluted Nellie Eckhart, again, congratulations, a respiratory therapist at UC Health in Loveland, and who was the first Coloradoan to get the COVID-19 vaccine, and Tony Moses, a nurse at UC Health in Greeley, who showed up for her patients. I remember this story. It was so heartwarming and so touching. Shows the heart and soul of our frontline healthcare workers. She showed up. Tony Moses did. Again, a nurse at UC Health in Greeley showed up for her patients despite battling stage 4 ovarian cancer. Now, of course, the guest list was pared down substantially due to COVID-19 and plexiglass and social distancing requirements, but still allowed for some very special attendees, among them Sheriff Justin Smith of Larimer County, who Governor Polis saluted for his work, as we all do, on the Cameron Peak and East Troublesome fires last year. Smith told Colorado Politics that while he admittedly has had his disagreements with the governor on key issues, quote, when it comes to community safety, partisanship gets set aside. We can only hope. Smith said he was there as a representative of all the firefighters, law enforcement, and other first responders who battled those blazes and others that, well, absolutely decimated the state. Meanwhile, Governor Polis, when it came to transportation, Oh, yes, dusting off another favorite phrase. You remember shovel-ready projects that never came to fruition under the Obama administration? Well, isn't it interesting that everything old is new again? The opportunity when it comes to transportation, that POLIS reference starts with shovel-ready projects in transportation, rural broadband, and public land maintenance to boost the economy and create jobs. On transportation, he called for road improvement projects from the Eisenhower Tunnel to our rural roads. Oh, he's remembering the rural areas of the state that our farmers and ranchers rely on, while also reducing traffic and improving our vibrant, beloved main streets in the process. Taxes. Let's talk a little bit about taxes. He also resurrected his campaign promise to address tax reform, saying it remains his goal to make Colorado's tax code more fair by getting rid of special interest tax breaks that, quote, benefit the few. His planned overhaul of the state tax code included eliminating the business personal property tax for thousands of small businesses, which actually earned him a rare standing ovation from GOP lawmakers. Okay, there's that. Doubling the earned income tax credit and providing up to $600 in tax credits per child for nearly 200,000 families through the Colorado Child Tax Credit, and eliminating taxes on seniors' Social Security benefits. He went on to say, all of this, along with the voter-approved reduction in the state income tax, will deliver the most substantial and comprehensive tax relief in decades for hard-working Coloradans and small businesses. Now, he turned to health care, also voicing support, but not elaborating upon what he would like to see to reduce health insurance costs. So not a whole lot of specificity there. Turning to education, he spoke of the toll that the COVID-19 pandemic has taken on education, said Coloradoans need in-person school now, not just for kids, but also to alleviate the strain remote learning has placed on parents. Those comments also earned the governor some praise from GOP lawmakers who, like many of us, want to see our kids back in school as soon as possible. Apparently, there was something for everyone to like in his 40-minute speech, and we'll grant you the point that this was perhaps the most bipartisan speech of Polis's entire time in office. Democrats, enthusiastic about his plans on health care, though not specific, and education, while Republicans were excited by the prospect of making the business personal property tax a thing of the past. You got to remember that reducing or flat out eliminating the tax has been on the GOP wish list for the past 15 years with little, if any, progress. First-year lawmaker, for example, Representative Mike Lynch, he's a Republican out of Wellington, he told Colorado Politics he, quote, could not stand up fast enough, close quote, to applaud Polis when he talked about the tax. Incidentally, Lynch owns a small business. He said the tax is a huge burden and, quote, anything that can reduce the burden on citizens and businesses during this horrible, horrible year is wonderful. Of course, referring to all of the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly in 2020. So, 40-minute speech summing up the state of the state in Colorado. Do you agree with Governor Polis' assessment on shovel-ready jobs and where the state is headed and radically reimagining Colorado? Or is that just a frightening nightmare? 970-353-1310. Drop me a text on our 1310 KFKA text line. 850 now, 1310 KFKA.
What's happening in your own backyard? Listen to NoCo Now with Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA. We have the games. Go to 1310kfk.com to see our preps, college, and pro game schedules on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
A53 on your Thursday morning, 1310 KFKA, 1310kfka.com, Northern Colorado's Voice, Mornings with Gail, via the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. Certainly going to be, well, a new normal as we mourn the passing of Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh, of course, passed yesterday from complications due to stage 4 lung cancer. His wife took to the airwaves, Catherine did, in order to make that announcement. But what a stunning loss, particularly when you consider the fact that Rush Limbaugh, over his 3+ decades as a broadcaster, sure, he was brash and he was full of braggadocio and, well, he had no time for political correctness whatsoever. But he became the voice of American conservatism, and certainly a voice that is going to be so tremendously missed. Wondering if it's even possible to fill that void. 854 now, 1310 KFKA.
Want the whole sports story in Northern Colorado, the state, and the country? Tune into The Hull Show, weekdays noon to 2 and 1310 KFKA. Keep up with your favorite high school basketball teams with Preps Radio on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
As we remember the life and legacy of Rush Limbaugh, who passed away yesterday, his heartfelt Christmas greeting from his December 30th, 2020 show. It's heartbreaking.
A yearly tradition, we wrap up with Mannheim Steamroller and Silent Night. And my ongoing attempt to thank everybody in the audience, all of you, for everything you mean to me. That last call, that's... reminds me how much I love all of you, how much I... so appreciate everything you've meant to me and my family. You don't have any idea how. I know so many people think this program has changed their lives for the better. You have no idea what you all have meant to me and my family. The day is going to come, folks, where I'm not going to be able to do this. I don't know when that is. I want to be able to do it for as long as I want to do it. I want to... but the day will come where I'm not going to be able to. And I want you to understand that even when the day comes, I'd like to be here. As I have this sense of needing to constantly show my appreciation for all that you have done and meant to me. So I hope you all have a great Christmas, a great New Year. And I hope that the things that are in store for all of us in the coming year are certainly better than what we have endured in 2020. I don't know, too many people have enjoyed 2020. Probably some sickos out there who have, but 2021 has to be better. We're going to try to make it that way here at the EIB Network. Again, folks, thank you so much. I wish there were a way to say it other than thank you. You're just the best. My family is just the best. Thank you.
Rest in peace, Rush.